Song always irritates me on Friday because, you know, he's singing that song, he's out partying, he's drinking, he's listening to music, he's probably dancing, and we still have to get through tonight's program. Hey, Truth Seekers, good evening. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for swinging by for a while. The subject tonight is to figure out which story we're going to share with you will piss you off the most. Oh, and by the way, we soon, hopefully it'll be early next week, we'll have video uploads at NovaMRadio.com, the Malloy section. This is for the Nova M Founders Club, and you can join that if you want to. It's $100 a year. We did a couple today. We have one of those new $100 digital video cams that just works with a computer. There's nothing to it. You just point, shoot. It's got a built-in a USB port or plug. You put it into the port in your computer, and it uploads. And it's real simple. Incredible technology for, what was it, $90 or something? $99. Anyway, we tried it today and sent it to Phoenix, and it was too dark or it was too this or it was too whatever. But it was kind of fun because what we're doing with that, I'm sharing some of the more outrageous emails, among other things. That's what we're going to start out doing, some of the more outrageous emails. The ones that come in that just have all kinds of bad words, you know, that I usually, when I'm reading them on the air, I'll say, so this guy says I should go blank myself. Well, on these audio uploads, we're not going to say blank. We're actually going to say it just to be real potty mouth, just for the sheer hell of it, to share with you the flavor, bad word, of some of these emails. I can just feel the intense anticipation waiting for those 2 and 3 minute videos. Well, they might be fun, you know, who knows. Time magazine is reporting on the rising use of prescription drugs among U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think it's a known fact as opposed to an unknown fact. I think it's a known fact that during World War II, Korea and Vietnam, our flyboys especially were given, let's stick with World War II, were given rather substantial doses of amphetamines to maintain their awareness and alertness while they were flying long-distance missions to bomb the enemy. Things changed, of course, by the time we got to the invasion and attempted occupation of Vietnam. Things had changed dramatically. A lot of our people in that war were using just about any drug they could get, but it was a lot of them were hallucinogenic. But what is being used now, according to data contained in the Army's fifth mental health advisory team report, and it's according to an anonymous survey of U.S. troops taken last fall, you know, when they bring the troop in and say, ask them a bunch of questions or hear a bunch of questions, no names, no ranks, no serial numbers. About 12% of combat troops in Iraq and 17% of combat troops in Afghanistan are taking prescription antidepressants or sleeping pills to help them cope. The military officials say escalating violence in Afghanistan and the fact that that mission is the more isolated of the two have driven troops to rely more on medication there than in Iraq. 70% in Afghanistan, 12% in Iraq. Now, as a sidebar to this story, according to Time magazine, nearly 40% of Army suicide victims in 2006 and 2007 took psychotropic drugs, overwhelmingly the SSRIs like Prozac and Zoloft. Now, the Army says these suicides are caused by failed relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That when a soldier comes home, he or she will then, because of combat stress or whatever, will separate from their families, from their spouse, their children, whatever, and as a result, a certain percentage will commit suicide. Some outside experts, though, sense a link between suicides and the use of these drugs. Now, that's been in the public eye with articles here for the past couple of years about suicides among teenagers who take these damn things. Now, I realize that. Don't write to me and tell me you've been taking Prozac for years and that you feel fine, because I know that's true with a lot of people. Okay, you know, that's kind of not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about, or what I'm just briefly touching on, is that 40% of Army suicide victims over the past 2 years took these psychotropic drugs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac and Zoloft. That's an alarming statistic to me. There's no way of knowing, of course, how many suicide attempts the antidepressants may have prevented by improving the soldier's spirit. But what we do know is how many have died, committed suicide, and who were taking these drugs. There's something so bizarre about drugs in combat. Maybe I wouldn't feel that way had I ever been in combat. But I'll tell you what, if you have never seen this film, you need to see it. It's called Jacob's Ladder. And the guy who played the lead role in Jacob's Ladder was Tim Robbins. This was back when he was young. I think this movie came out. This came out when we were in Chicago, right? About 10 years ago? 12 years ago? It is one of the scariest movies I have ever seen. And it completely warps your sense of reality, and it has to do with soldiers in Vietnam subsequent to their service in Vietnam, and the experimenting on these soldiers with drugs, which also is a fact that the military high command, the Pentagon, experimented on U.S. soldiers with all sorts of drugs that they were developing. Hallucinogenics, drugs that they thought perhaps if they could get into the hands of the enemy's water supply or food supply would make them all lay down and throw away their guns, or drugs that would make people ingesting them think they were seeing monsters of such a horrifying nature that they would go into an absolute panic. Drugs that would turn normally heterosexual people into homosexual, horny guys who just couldn't wait to climb on each other and therefore destroy whatever cohesion existed in the unit. That kind of thing. This is always, of course, what happens to soldiers. What happened to all the soldiers in the first Gulf War, Pappy Bush's Gulf War, that were forced to take all of those injections? Remember that? Anthrax injections and the second Gulf War, Junior's Gulf War, in his unending quest to prove that his was bigger than Daddy's. But what happened to the troops that were forced to take all of those injections? What happened to the guys that refused? And it was mostly guys at the time. There were some women troops who said, "No, you know, I might want to have children someday. What are you giving me?" And what were they? They were released from the military with a dishonorable discharge. Were they given brig time? I have no idea. I do remember a series of stories though that were popular back in 90. When did we invade the first time? 91? Iraq? And then again in 2003? Those stories have just disappeared, haven't they? I wonder what happened to those soldiers. We'll be back. Speaking of a disability, how about John McCain? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. I am well aware that the morning is near. Put that radio down. Don't ask me no questions.
to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Past the hour. Oh, does that song make me nostalgic? John McCain, do you realize he's on, I didn't know this, he's on 100% Navy disability pension. Is he still fit enough for the White House? The LA Times reports that, on this past Monday, McCain's staff identified something that was on McCain's 2007 income tax return, and that was pension income of $58,358 that was not taxed. $58,358 that was not taxed. And his staff explained, they identified that as a retirement benefit and told the LA Times that it is a disability pension. And they also said that McCain, quote, was retired as disabled because of his limited body movements due to injuries as a prisoner of war, end quote. Now, you know his story. He was shot down over Hanoi, and in the ejection from his crashing plane and the beating administered by his captors, he suffered a shattered knee and two broken arms, which were left untreated. And as a result, he can't raise his arms above his shoulder. The Navy has classified him as 100% disabled, which makes the pension tax-free. So is there a disparity, the LA Times asks, is there a disparity and health concern in a White House candidate who, if elected, would be the oldest man ever inaugurated, and who is receiving a 100% disability military pension? That's a fair question. It's a good question. It's also a good question because I think it is apparent to anyone who has eyes that Mr. McCain is not 100% disabled. As a matter of fact, last summer, in order to show that as a 71-year-old, he certainly was in good shape, he hiked the Grand Canyon with his son, and he vowed to out-campaign all of his opponents in the primary. And he did just that. And now he's the GOP nominee. But 100% disabled. Now, McCain, of course, is the candidate for president who says no, hell no, to the new GI Bill that was cobbled together by a couple of his colleagues in the Senate. I think Chuck Hagel and John Warner were involved in this, Jim Webb. These are all Vietnam veterans like McCain is. I may have one of those names wrong. But anyway, the new GI Bill would provide college tuition at public schools, state universities, you know, not Harvard, not Yale, but state universities. And McCain, along with these filthy Republicans in the Senate and the House, say no. Because the requirement is to get this college money is just 3 years in the military, and that'll make people join the military, serve their 3 years, and get out and go to school, and we don't want that. So this sorry son of a bitch has decided, this guy who jets around the country, runs for president, and is considered 100% disabled by the United States Navy, this phony, hypocritical son of a bitch is saying no. He gets 58 grand a year untaxed. That's not what the soldiers would get under the new GI Bill to go to school. Nowhere near that. Not even close. Not even in the same county as that. So McCain, once again, as a Republican, displays his utter contempt for his fellow veterans. This guy was in the military. Not that he had any respect for the military or the fact that he was there. He was not a gung-ho pilot. He was kind of shanghaied into it because of his old man. But is it not an outrage to have a guy here, John McCain, who, yes, has gimpy arms because they were pulled out of the sockets by the people who caught him after he was persistent in bombing their civilians into bloody chunks of human meat. So they caught him, and they tortured him. Wow! And part of the torture, apparently, was deforming his arms. But he is not one. I know people who are 100% disabled. And so do you. Some of them we know, we don't really know. Stephen Hawking is 100% disabled. I know people suffering from ALS who are 100% disabled. John McCain is what? 20? 10? 5? 4? What percentage would you say, Truth Seeker? He can't raise his arms. Oh, okay. $58,358 tax-free from the U.S. taxpayers because he's 100% disabled. Ah, bat squeeze.
The least that I can do. I trash the man who does not stand to salute our president. Because in these times we must fall in line. For dissent. And I support the troops, my friend, so I drive an SUV in honor of those brave young souls who died to give the right to me. You know, gasoline.
American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. No sooner did I mention the situation with Gulf War veterans from 1991 and this article in Time and reports over the years about what has happened to these veterans, especially the women, the minority, in that particular combat operation, 1991. I get an email from Christy Davis. It says, Mike, thanks for your mention of sick Gulf War veterans on today's show. 17 years later, their war is not over. We're making a documentary on female Gulf War veterans and their battles with Gulf War illnesses, definitely U.S. government guinea pigs. And Christy sent a website here. During the break, I looked at, they've got a movie trailer up from what they've shot so far. You got to go see this, all right? The website is Women at War Movie, womenatwarmovie.com, womenatwarmovie.com. And it's Christy and Dennis Davis are producing this film. It is an aspect of the two Bushes wars that just you don't hear about at all. Check them out. womenatwarmovie.com. And there's a couple 3-minute trailer there. Thanks for writing, Christy. Let us know how that works out. Speaking of insane McCain, here's an interview from 2000. He was interviewed on the PBS NewsHour with Jim Lehrer back then and admitted that in 2008, that's now, he'd be too old to run for president. He's probably kidding. You know, that slipping mental state thing again, maybe. Growing old ain't for sissies, trust me. This is Jim Lehrer and John McCain.
You have not lost your desire to be president of the United States, have you?
Certainly it's been put in deep cold storage.
You haven't lost it.
Well, in 2004, I expect to be campaigning for the reelection of President George W. Bush. And by 2008... I think I might be ready to go down to the old soldier's home and await the cavalry charge there.
Oh, he was just kidding. He was just kidding. McCain is, he's got an ally in the United States Senate who has started an organization for him. It's called the, what's it called? Pro McCain organization. Citizens for McCain. There you go. And it's being set up by Joe Lieberman. Now, keep in mind that when Barack Obama came to the United States Senate, Holy Joe was his mentor. And keep in mind that when Holy Joe, when the voters of Connecticut had had enough of this guy, the Democratic voters, Barack Obama campaigned for Holy Joe against Ned Lamont. Ned Lamont won. So Holy Joe ran as an independent, and all the Republicans voted for him. So he got back into the Senate, Holy Joe Lieberman, as an independent. Now, the way he pays back Barack Obama, you see how slimy these filthy Republicans are? Well, somebody said, if you're in Washington and you want a friend, get a dog. But, I mean, this is kind of crappy. Where's this from? Anybody know where this is from? I don't know where it's from anyway. Steve Bannon put this up at a website. Is it Crooks and Liars? I don't know. But Steve writes, it's hard not to get the sense that Lieberman is just taunting the Democrats at this point. Lieberman doesn't want to just burn the bridge back to the Democratic Party. He wants to pour salt in the earth around the wreckage. A couple of days ago, Lieberman joined a conference call coordinated by a right-wing House member to bash Barack Obama. And yesterday, Thursday, he announced the creation of what he calls a new grassroots organization called Citizens for McCain. And from the letter the McCain campaign distributed today, we find this. Citizens for McCain is an organization within the McCain campaign for people who put country before political party and support the candidate for president who has a proven record of bipartisanship. As you know, I caucus with the Democrats. As you know, I caucus with the Democrats as a United States Senator and was the Democratic Party nominee for Vice President. I got to go home this evening to see Hadassah. I was the Democrat Party's nominee for Vice President of the United States against Biden, Bush, and Cheney. But first and foremost, I'm an American. I have an obligation to do what I think is best for our nation, regardless of political party. Oh, God. That's Lieberman. Lieberman. Can you believe this guy? How far gone is Lieberman? Every time I see McCain on television lately, I see Lieberman, his shade. You know, there's Lieberman. It's just weird. And there's a picture up at, where is it? Is it Crooks and Liars? A picture of Lieberman and McCain kissing. What is with all these white conservatives who kiss each other? And yet, I don't know, get weak in the knees when somebody really turns out to be gay. Oh, can I kiss your mouth? Oh, and you know, Bush holds hands with the Saudis. Oh, I know it's a custom, but still, Lieberman and McCain kissing. Oh, sweetie. Oh, God, I wish Hadassah would kiss me like that. How far gone is Lieberman? Lieberman calls Citizens for McCain a new grassroots organization. It isn't. It isn't. In fact, it's not even an organization. It's a gimmick of the McCain campaign. And the sole function of Citizens for McCain. That sounds so Orson Welles-ish, doesn't it? The whole idea of Citizens for McCain is to collect money and addresses. Now, McCain will be if he gets to be president, he'll be getting lots of addresses from all the spying agencies. But as Steve Bannon writes, campaigns come up with these gimmicks all the time. But for a sitting senator to announce that he's the chair of a new grassroots organization when there is no organization is kind of ridiculous. Maybe Obama needs to back him up against another wall, huh? What do you think? Frankenstein on barbiturates. Who said that? Oh my God, McCain's green speech the other night when Hillary and Barack were making their speeches and McCain's handlers put him in front of tens and tens of people down in Kenner, Louisiana, and put him in front of a green backdrop and painted his face. That's not that kind of change we can. What was the rest of it? We can rely on. That's not the kind of change we need. He was like Frankenstein on barbiturates.
More like Frankenstein on embalming fluid.
Oh, it was awful. It was just awful. Oh, my God. Couple more things here very quickly before we get to the really hardcore make your eyes bleed stuff. South Carolina drivers will be the first in the nation to be offered license plates that carry the phrase, "I believe," and a Christian cross over a stained glass window. That will come about as a result of a law that took effect yesterday. The bill authorizing this plate passed the State House and Senate unanimously on May 22nd. The South Carolina State House and Senate not have any Jews, any Hindus, any Muslims, any atheists, agnostic, anything? Is it all just Christian freakoids? It passed unanimously. But it became law without the signature of Governor Mark Sanford, who is a Republican. Sanford said, quote, "While I do in fact believe, quote, quote, it is my personal view that the largest proclamation of one's faith ought to be in how one lives one's life." Well, there's a radical idea, Governor. The bill directs the Motor Vehicles Department to create the plate. Says, "I believe," has a Christian cross over a stained glass window. Now, is this kind of violation of the First Amendment of separation of the separation of church and state? The state offers 200 other specialty plates that support organizations like colleges, sororities, Boy Scouts, Surf Rider Foundation, blah, 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 blah. Senator Larry Grooms, the co-sponsor of the bill, said, "You know what? I just reject the ACLU when they argue that that people are trying to get the state to endorse their religion. I just reject that. You know, Jesus Christ is my Lord and personal Savior, I don't see a constitutional problem with any of this. We have other plates with religious symbols on them. Okay, we don't, but I'll just tell a little Christian lie there. You won't burn me in hell for that one, will you? Just because it's a cross, some very close-minded people don't believe it should be on the license plate. Well, I'll be goddamned if it shouldn't. Of course, did I say that word? I believe it should be on that plate. We believe in Jesus over here in South Carolina.
It's in the Gulf Coast countries' interest that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Tim in Indiana writes regarding the license plates. In all these states where the "I believe" plates are passing, I would like to see a national organization of Wiccans apply the next day for their plate. "I believe" with a pentagram. Or an Islamic organization, "I believe," or a polygamous plate, "I believe," with a man and five women. I might add, Tim, how about a Jewish plate with the Star of David? "I believe." Wouldn't the Christian heads just explode? Tim in Indiana. Michael in Roswell, regarding disability. Michael writes, "Let's compare apples to apples on this. Let's take senator to former senator. Max Cleland is missing three limbs, but insists on dressing himself each morning. Takes him about 2 hours. Went to work in the Senate in a wheelchair. Max Cleland has a 100% disability rating, I would guess. I have known, Michael writes, GI's missing one limb, who received a 50% disability rating. We happen to know Max Cleland, and I don't know what his disability rating is, but he's the guy who is just extremely angry, not because, I don't think, because, well, of course, because what happened to him, but he is so furious about what this cowardly little son of a bitch down here in Georgia did to steal Max Cleland's Senate seat. I'm talking about, what's his name? What's the senator here, Kathy? Saxby. Saxby Chambliss. Paul in PA writes, Mike, a friend just went through renal failure from Agent Orange exposure during NAM. He now gets $32,000 a year disability payment, and he's hooked up to dialysis 3 days a week and is a zombie the other days from the dialysis. Referencing McCain's disability. I don't know how McCain gets $50-some thousand dollars, 100% disability, and that's because I am ignorant and don't understand how the disability system works, but I am not stupid. And for John McCain to accept the $58,000 tax-free every year, I would imagine every year since he has returned from his service, quote-quote, in the United States Navy, and then lobby actively against young veterans coming out of combat zones, if that's where they're coming from, after 3 years, and wanting a college education at a state university, and McCain will have none of that. You know, the phony son of a bitch. I hate that. Mark writes in, Mike, just tuned into your monologue about drugs in combat. I'm a Vietnam combat vet. I was a helicopter door gunner. With the Navy's Riverine Force, we provided air support for the patrol boats and SEAL operations in the Mekong Delta. The SEALs routinely took a pill they called Green Meanies, which I assumed were amphetamines to keep them alert on all-night ambushes. After I left Vietnam, I attended a course at the Army's Chemical and Biological Warfare School at Fort McClellan, Alabama. During the course, they showed us a training film where a bunch of U.S. troops were on maneuvers in a forested area. A plane flew over the exercise and sprayed the soldiers with a chemical called BZ. It was a disorienting chemical, and the effect on the troops was chilling. Most of them appeared to experience some sort of paranoia, throwing down their weapons and trying to run or hide from the cameraman. The course instructor told us that the troops were basic trainees who were undergoing infantry training, and they didn't know they were going to be attacked with BZ. When we asked whether or not they had signed some sort of waiver volunteering for such a thing to happen to them, the instructor laughed and said, "This is the Army. They don't need anyone's permission to do anything they wanted to anybody they wanted to do it to." He also didn't know whether or not there were any long-term effects from being dosed with BZ. Years later, when I read about the CIA's drug experiments on unsuspecting American citizens and several subsequent suicides, I wondered how many of those trainees may have committed suicide or were still suffering from the after effects of their encounters with BZ. I'll have to see if I can find Jacob's Ladder so I can see if it is more disturbing than that training film. Mark in Fallbrook, California. Thanks, Mark. You will find that the movie Jacob's Ladder will be one of the most frightening movies and disorienting movies I think you've ever seen. I really do. Anybody who wants to get that from Netflix or wherever you get that film, Jacob's Ladder, it's horrifying. As a matter of fact, as I say that, you know, I think, oh, my God, what about somebody who has experienced combat, especially jungle combat, so that would be pretty much Vietnam, and sees this film. And, my belief is, and I've never been in combat, so I don't know. My belief is, because I had three uncles who were in combat, my belief is that anyone who is in that kind of a setting, where it's kill or be killed, where there's certain tactics that you learned in basic training, and then all of a sudden you're there, anyone who goes through that is to greater or lesser degrees dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. How could you not be? How could you not be? So to say that PTSD is identifiable by a certain collection of symptoms that have to be presented before a psychologist or a psychiatrist, to me, is nonsense. Who goes into combat and comes out the same way they went in? And don't email me, any veterans who might be feeling a little jockey tonight, want to say, oh, yo, Malloy, you don't know what you're talking about. It was a hell of a ride. Man, I just blew the sons of bitches away. Ain't no stress here, talk show boy. Don't send me that. Don't. Please don't. I don't see how anyone can go through actual combat and not suffer to some degree from PTSD. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. If you don't, you're going to miss the best part of the program. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm sure you're aware of what happened with the price of oil and the stock market today. Wow, oil prices up more than $11 to $139 a barrel. Wow. Morgan Stanley is predicting it's going to hit 150 by the 4th of July. I think that's rather conservative. There is no upward limit here because it's being driven by speculation, and that can go on forever, right? So as far as gas prices at the pump, it's certainly changing some of our habits, right? What do you suppose? $5 a gallon, $6 a gallon by the end of summer? Stock market plunged today, 400 points? And the largest jump in unemployment percentages, half a percentage point, the largest single jump in since 1986. The oil traders, the future traders, zeroed in on remarks by an Israeli cabinet minister who is quoted as saying his country will attack Iran if it does not abandon its nuclear program. Just right there. We will attack. It was the statement came from Transportation Minister Shalom Mofaz. He added that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, quote, will disappear before Israel does, end quote. Whoa. Now, of course, Iran is the second biggest producer in OPEC, and the oil futures traders are worrying that any conflict with Israel could disrupt global supplies. Oh, and the other thing, a further weakening of the dollar also helped send oil prices higher. So do you get the feeling, I do, that there is this coalescing of events that I sometimes walk around feeling like I have a huge target painted on me, and by extension we all have targets, bullseyes, top of our heads, middle of our backs, and all these this economic stuff that Bush and Cheney and the rest of these rotten bastards, remember what they were handed by Bill Clinton. Remember the economic situation they were handed by Bill Clinton. But I get the feeling I have this target on my back, and there's going to be just a collision of, metaphorically speaking, a collision of several, not one or two or three, maybe four or five or six economic crises that are going to fuse and head right for the target on the top of my head or the middle of my back. And it's I don't know what it's going to do. I think about this. I think about at my age, I have a four-year-old to support. I've got one kid in college. I've got another one in daycare. Listen to me. Preschool, not daycare. Preschool. It just... And that's my granddaughter. It's just... it's scary. I wish I would have handled my life differently, Kathy. I wish I would not have considered myself to be some kind of frontier rebel for so many years, you know, never getting my financial house in order. So now here I am, like a lot of people in this country. Men and women of a certain age who thought, or at least... you know, believe that if they did certain things, they would be okay when they hit a certain stage in their life. But for those of us who did not do that, oh boy, it is pretty scary out here. But so what, right? As long as there is Nova M Radio, I guess I have a job. And as long as my union doesn't tank, I guess I have health insurance. But this oil price and unemployment and food prices and whoa. Unbelievable stuff. CBS News is reporting. You got to hear this. You've got to hear this. When I saw this story today, Jan sent it to me. And he identifies himself as an American Jew. This is from CBS News. Now listen to the whole thing, and no, I'm not committing a grammatical error here or a mispronunciation. Listen to this. The heading is from CBS News: Israel to U.S. Don't delay Iraq attack. The story says Israel is urging U.S. officials not to delay a military strike against Iraq's Saddam Hussein, an aide to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon said Friday. Israeli intelligence officials have gathered evidence that Iraq is speeding up efforts to produce biological and chemical weapons, said Sharon aide Ranaan Gissin. Gissin said, quote, any postponement of an attack on Iraq at this stage will serve no purpose. It will only give Saddam more of an opportunity to accelerate his program of weapons of mass destruction, end quote. The United States has been considering a military campaign against Iraq to remove Saddam from power, listing him as one of the world's main terrorist regimes. However, there is considerable world opposition to a U.S. strike. As evidence of Iraq's weapons building activities, Israel points to an order Saddam gave to Iraq's Atomic Energy Commission last week to speed up its work, Mr. Gissin said. Mr. Gissin added, quote, Saddam's going to be able to reach a point where these weapons will be operational, end quote. Also on Friday, President Bush said he knows there are, quote, very intelligent people, end quote, who doubt the wisdom of attacking Iraq. But he said Saddam Hussein is, quote, thumbing his nose at the world, end quote, and must be ousted. Let me digress for a moment. Who uses that kind of an expression? Who uses that? A 10-year-old? Your great auntie? George Bush? Well, Saddam Hussein is thumbing his nose at the world. Back to CBS's article. Speaking to reporters near his Texas ranch, the president vowed to make his decision based on the best intelligence available. Gissin said also said Israel was not seeking to dictate the timing of U.S. military campaign, but said that faced with the threat of one, Saddam was fast developing weapons. While the Israeli government backs U.S. action against Iraq, there is also concern in Israel that in response, Iraq would launch missile attacks against Tel Aviv and other cities in Israel. In an interview published Friday, Ben Eliezer told the Daily newspaper, and I can't pronounce it, that Israel would surely become a target during such a conflict and would consider retaliation in coordination with U.S. forces. Ben Eliezer told the newspaper, quote, "We will be one of the main targets. But I told the Americans, and I repeat it, don't expect us to continue to live with the process of restraint. If they hit us, we reserve the right of response." Now, this is from August 16th, 2002. August 16th, 2002. I guess I missed this. I didn't know that Israel was urging the United States not to hesitate to attack Iraq because Israeli intelligence had clear and compelling evidence that Saddam Hussein was developing weapons of mass destruction. Wait a second. And now, this little numbed out freak in the White House is being urged once again by the Israeli government not to hesitate to attack Iran. What the hell is going on here? Ariel Sharon gets Bush in a room someplace and says, "Get them." Ehud Olmert gets Bush in a room someplace and says, "Get them." 6 years apart, two different countries. What the hell is going on here? Jan sent this to me. I'd like to give his last name. He signed it, but I you know, probably shouldn't. I think it's a male. More on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So John sent me that, Jan sent me that story from CBS News from 6 years ago, and he writes, "Hi Mike, as Israel pressures the U.S. to attack Iran, it is well to remember that they also pressured us to attack Iraq. They have not paid the price, but we have, and certainly the Iraqis have. When will America wake up and tell Israel that their quarrels are not ours? When will we stop allowing Israel to use us so that they can continue with their brutal occupation, their plans for a greater Israel? This American Jew says no more." Jan in his last name. I feel compelled to get something clear here, and I've said this before, but it may be time to say it again, because I have focused an awful lot of attention on Israeli foreign policy and domestic internal policy too in the past couple of weeks. I don't doubt for a moment that an organization like AIPAC does not represent the political views of even a minority, I was going to say a majority of American Jews, certainly a very small minority. There are so many organizations in the United States and in Israel that desperately try to bring about a peaceful settlement to this 60-year-long horror that's been going on for the Palestinians and the Israeli Jews. It's almost impossible to do. I think most of us know this, because it is a Jewish state. And if the state of Israel were to incorporate all of the Palestinians, to offer the right of return from the Palestinian diaspora, it would no longer be a Jewish state. As long as they decide that it's going to be a Jewish state, like the Islamic Republic of Iran. You could say the Jewish Republic of Israel. As long as it's going to be a Jewish country, then it is going to that is going to result in a lot of conflict. There are so many, the vast majority, in my opinion, of Jews around the globe and in Israel are desperately trying to find some way to stop this. Now, before someone writes to me and says, well, the quickest way is to have them get the hell out, you know, before you go there, try if you can, and I know a lot of you cannot, try if you can to understand the emotional attachment the Jews have to this mythological place, this state of Israel. Try to remember at the end of every Seder dinner during Passover, that statement next year in Jerusalem. What that means, if you're not Jewish, you can't know. I mean, it's impossible to know. I'm trying to think of some other way to hook non-Jews into the emotional feelings that Jews have. Now, having said all that, there are so many Jewish Americans who have supported so much good in this country and in Israel, not just civil rights and human rights, and not just for people in this country, but also for Palestinians. And they try. There is a whole new generation out here, two generations, possibly three, since the establishment of State of Israel, who are not Zionists, who are not hell-bent on destroying the Palestinian people and their land and their olive orchards and their grape orchards or whatever. There are so many Jews in Israel who are against the settlements because they understand what that represents. I swore off this topic for years because any time I brought it up, no matter the position I took, this group would call me an anti-Semite. This group would start with the real hate the Jews emails. And invariably, that's the case. Invariably, the Zionists in this country, the pro-Zionists in this country, the American Jews who really are pro-Zionist, start with the emails. Malloy is an anti-Semite. Malloy hates Israel. Malloy hates Jews. And to you people, I just give the finger. I don't know what else to say. You know, I've tried it all. To the people who start to tell me that the Jews are evil and the Jews have done this and the Jews have that, to you I give the other finger. What's wrong with you? Are you people crazy? Are all of you crazy? I'm serious here. Are you all crazy? Are you nuts on both sides of this issue? What the hell do you use for brains? Desert sand? There are so many people trying to find a solution. The government of Israel, in so many aspects, is no more representative of the desires of the people of Israel than the government of the United States is responsive to the desires of the people of this country. Come on, wake up, okay? Israeli policy is not Jewish policy. It is Israeli policy. If that sounds like a contradiction about what I just said about Israel as a Jewish state, it is not. America is a Christian nation, so we're told. Are we acting like one? Of course not. Except where we have the license plates that say, I believe, and there's a cross. So, you know, once again, I just feel compelled to try not to explain myself, because either you get what this is about or you don't. But it's just so irritating to hear from the Zionists on the one side, Malai hates Jews, and the freaky anti-Semites on the other side, the goddamn Jews have caused everything. And again, are all of you people nuts? Do you not understand what's at stake in this little sad country? Country's always going to war for many days. John Bush playing family feud with the town. Survey said, oops, you out of town. We the only ones allowed to have nuclear bombs. Guaranteed it won't be another Vietnam. 911 ain't a joke no more. Nowadays, it's a whole different approach to war. Bin Laden, Bin Laden, out of Pakistan.
Representatives of the government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, represented respectively Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. Anyway, Jan, thanks for the email and the link to the story about Israel pressuring the United States to attack Iraq. And again, I just cannot believe, and I will not believe, that the majority of Israeli Jews want a continuation of 60 years of endless war. And I understand the history of the establishment of the State of Israel. There are so many things that go into play there. I've looked at it from both sides. I've struggled. I've fought with myself. I've fought with good friends. I've lost good friends. I've lost Palestinian friends. I've lost Jewish friends. On the other hand, I have gained Palestinian friends. I have gained Jewish friends from this issue, and we will continue to talk about it. We will continue to talk about it. So for the American Zionists who consider me to be a threat to Israel or anti-Semitic, again, I tell you to kishmir and tokus. The real anti-Semites out there, the ones who just can't wait to hear the word Jew so they can start with their, well, there was no Zyklon B gas at Treblinka. Here's the documents. That was a delousing agent. You know, for you people, go screw yourself, okay? I mean, you are so irrelevant to anything that's on this program as to render you a puff of bad air. So just go away. I wish both of these groups would leave me the hell alone. I know you won't. I know you'll continue with your harassment, but the position I will take on this issue is constant and firm. It will not change, and I will continue to talk about it, okay? But I do need to just feel the need to make it clear, because I understand, you know, talking about this Israeli-Palestinian issue or the so-called Jewish issue in this country is so familiar. It's like talking about race. It's like talking about when the schools were getting ready to be integrated here. There is so much emotion tied up in these subjects. There's so much dislike and contempt and misinformation and disinformation. You've got to be out of your mind to wade into this. And I understand that. Maybe I'm out of my mind, but there is no way in hell that I won't continue to do what I'm doing. The day that I discontinue will be the day I get out of radio. That's all. It's just very simple. It's just very simple. And no matter how many times that I say that Molly's godfather is Jewish, no matter how many times I talk about my God, Jewish godson, no matter how many times I go down this route, how many times I've sat shiva with people, I've gone to seders, I've done this, I've done that. On the other hand, no matter how many times I talk about the atrocities that have been committed and are ongoing against the Palestinian people, it doesn't make any difference. I still get the emails. I still get the garbage. I still get your nasty mouths coming at me from this email direct that you send in. All I can say to you is it's not going to work. Okay? I'm going to talk about this issue. And I will try to do it as fairly and as balanced as I can. And I appreciate the support from so many American Jews that listen to this program over the years. So much support from Jewish listeners who say, you know, this is an issue for us too. This is, don't listen to the anti-Semitic charges. Don't listen to these people. Don't listen. Don't listen. And I don't know. I guess I need to affirm that I don't listen normally. But when the issue becomes the intertwining of U.S. and Israeli foreign policy, when you have these monstrous liars in both governments, Israel and the U.S., who seem hell-bent for whatever their reasons are in bringing about all of this war and death and destruction, what would you like me to do? Sit here and not bring up this topic when it directly affects every American and every Israeli and every Palestinian and damn near everybody in the Middle East? Are you kidding? Don't bring it up? But I know that's the prevailing attitude. Either bow down at AIPAC or shut up. Well, I'm going to do neither. And I understand that the vast majority of American Jews will do neither. So. What else we got here? Oh, this is pretty unbelievable, but this comes from McClatchy Newspapers, which is usually pretty on target. Apparently, there was suspicion within the Defense Department during the run-up to Bush's invasion of Iraq that Iranian exiles were providing so-called intelligence on Iraq to a small group of Pentagon officials that was garbage. And the thought back then was that maybe these Iranians were being used as agents of a foreign intelligence service to reach into and influence the highest levels of the U.S. government. Now, that was part of that Senate Intelligence Committee report that was released yesterday. The report went on to say that a top aide to then Secretary of Defense and outrageous American traitor Donald Rumsfeld shut down this investigation in 2003, an investigation into the Pentagon officials' activities after only a month. Now, what this is about is it looks like there were Iranian double agents who were feeding information to the Pentagon, to the U.S. Defense Department, in order to provoke this war. Now, on the one hand, you have the Israeli government back in 2002, the government of Ariel Sharon, pushing for this war. You have Iranians pushing for this war. Why Iranians? Well, Jesus, God, Iran was a mortal enemy of Saddam Hussein. They fought an 8-year war, Iran and Iraq, during Saddam's reign. How many Iranians and Iraqis were killed? 1 million? 2 million? I can remember I worked for CNN at the time, and this was one of the ongoing stories that I wrote about. The Iranian children who were sent into areas that the Iraqis had mined because this war of attrition had gotten so bad that neither side could afford to lose soldiers. Now, is the story apocryphal? Who knows? Nothing in the Middle East is as it appears. It's all illusion. It's all just floating smoke in the desert. Who knows if these stories are true? But one thing we do know is that there was an 8-year war between Iraq and Iran, and they were mortal enemies. Now, the war, Bush's war against Iraq, has made Iran the primary beneficiary of our policy there. Iranian-backed groups in Iraq now run much of that government and the security forces. Are you aware of this, Truth Seeker? Huh? Now it turns out, according to McClatchy Newspapers, that there may have been, and you're gonna lose it when I give you his name, there may have been a man involved in feeding false information to the U.S., branches of the U.S. government, most notably the Defense Department, where decisions were being made outside, away from the State Department, away from Congress, possibly even away from the little dumbass who sits in the White House. But according to McClatchy Newspapers, the aborted counterintelligence investigation probed, this is what Rumsfeld said, stop investigating! But it probed some Pentagon officials' contacts with Iranian exile Manachir Gorbanifar. Do you remember him? The CIA called him a fabricator back in 1984, and there's a reason. Anyway, the contacts were brokered by an American civilian, Michael Ledeen. Does that name sound familiar? A former Pentagon and National Security Council consultant and a leading advocate of invading Iraq and overthrowing Iran's Islamic regime. Michael Ledeen has deep and abiding ties to the Israeli government and the Mossad, the Israeli the Israeli intelligence organization. Manacher Gorbanifar was the Iranian who back in the 80s brokered the missiles for hostages deal during the Iran-Contra affair during Reagan's presidency. He was also suspected at the time as being a double agent for Mossad. Now, he has reemerged in U.S. politics, or he did reemerge during the lead-up to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. He was supposedly the back-channel intelligence source to certain Pentagon officials who wanted regime change in Iran. Manacher Gorbanifar. More when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. According to the Senate report, Senate Intelligence Committee report that was released yesterday, the Pentagon's Counterintelligence Field Activity Unit concluded in 2003 that Michael Ledeen, who been informed also had his fingerprints all over the Niger documents, Laura Rosen at warandpeace.com went into depth on that one, Michael Ledeen's involvement in these documents. And, of course, Ledeen is another one of the pigs from the Poindexter, Abrams, Oliver North, Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush clan back in the 80s. But anyway, according to the Senate report, it was concluded in 2003 that Michael Ledeen, quote, was likely unwitting of any counterintelligence issues related to his relationship with Mr. Gorbanifar, which would indicate to me that the Senate Intelligence Committee is trying to cover this guy's ass, Ledeen. The counterintelligence unit said, however, that Ledeen's association with Gorbanifar was widely known, and therefore it should be presumed other foreign intelligence services, including those of Iran, would know. So here you have two people, Michael Ledeen and Manacher Gorbanifar, an Iranian and an American, who it appears have been involved in not one, not two, but three deliberately false bloody enterprises over the past 20 years that the United States has gotten involved in. Michael Ledeen and Manacher Gorbanifar. Now, I know this is not news to a lot of you. I know you're way ahead of me on this. Okay, that's fine. But who talks about it? The Senate report said that Pentagon officials never followed up on the investigators' recommendation for a comprehensive analysis of whether Gorbanifar or his associates tried, quote, to directly or indirectly influence or access U.S. government officials, end quote. And why did they never follow up? Because they were ordered not to. First, by Donald Rumsfeld, and one must assume, secondly, by Dick Cheney. Stay out of this, boys. This is our realm, and it has been since the 80s. Stay out of this, boys. The Senate committee also found that Pentagon officials concealed the contacts with Gorbanifar, the contacts between the Defense Department and this Iranian freak. They were concealed from the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and the State Department. Pentagon officials also provided Senate investigators with an inaccurate account. That means a list of lies of events. And with support from two unnamed officials in Cheney's office. Oh, gee, could that have been Irving Libby, one of them? I'll bet it was. They continued meeting with Ghorbanifar after contact with him was officially ordered to stop. The first meetings with Ghorbanifar, which were disclosed in August 2003 by Newsday newspaper, took place in Rome in December 2001. They were attended by two Pentagon Iran experts, by an Italian military intelligence official, and by Ledeen. This is when the phony documents were put together about Iraq getting yellow cake uranium from Niger, from Africa. This is where all that occurred. The documents were phony. Ghorbanifar, Michael Ledeen, Dick Cheney, do you see what these bastards have been doing? Taking the United States, every single death, every single American death, and every single Iraqi death since March of 2003 rests directly on these five or six people, the responsibility, these lying son of a bitches, these traitors, these people who have brought untold grief to American families, to Iraqi families. This was in the Senate intelligence report. Among other things the Iranians told the Americans about, Iranian hit teams, they said, were targeting U.S. personnel and facilities in Afghanistan. What they claimed was Shiite Muslim Iran's long-standing relationship with the Secular Palestine Liberation Organization. Tunnel complexes in Iran for weapons storage or exfiltrating of regime leaders. And about the alleged growth of anti-regime sentiment in Iran. And it goes on and on. During the Rome meetings, Ghorbanifar laid out a scheme to overthrow the Iranian regime. He is Iranian, but he wants to be the top dog. He laid it out on a napkin during a late-night meeting in a bar. The plan, said the Senate committee, this report that was released yesterday, involved the simultaneous disruption of traffic at key intersections leading to Tehran that would create anxiety, work stoppages, and other disruptive measures in the capital city famous for its traffic congestion. And on and on, Ghorbanifar asked for $5 million in seed money. Do you know this rat bastard son of a bitch Ghorbanifar took a cut on all of those TOW missiles that we sold to Iran in order to get various hostages released? I'm not talking about the 79 hostage crisis. I'm talking about in the early 80s. Do you remember the American? You remember Jesse Jackson got some freed? So here he is again. Munichir Ghorbanifar. Is he a Mossad agent? Who cares? Who cares? Do you know what I care about all this? The absolute monumental Mount Everest of ignorance and duplicity and hypocrisy and lies of people in my government. Not Israel's, not Iran's, not Iraq's, mine. Mine. Every single dead American, every single dead Iraqi is the result of the lies told by this group of five or six Americans and one or two Iranians and maybe an Israeli. Damn. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. I want to give you a website here that I strongly, strongly recommend for international news and commentary. It is Laura Rosen's website. It is War and Peace, only the peace is spelled P-I-E-C-E, as in a piece of warandpeace.com. P-I-E-C-E, warandpeace.com. You should check this out at least once a week, this website, more often if you've got the time. So much of the information that, not an inordinate amount, but a huge chunk of information that I get doing research for various programs comes from this website, warandpeace, P-I-E-C-E.com. By Laura Rosen, and there's a bio page there. You can find out all you want to find out about Laura Rosen. All right. It is, and if you want more information about did Iranian agents really dupe Pentagon officials, that is a website where you can start. But just remember, Adnan Khashoggian, I think, was the other Iranian arms dealer. But this guy, Manoucher, however you pronounce it, Gorbanifar, his last name was one that sticks with me. In the 80s, he was Gorbanifar's principal American contacts were National Security Council agents Oliver North and Michael Ledeen. Gorbanifar wasn't successful in the 80s, but he damn sure has been lately, but he tried to get the U.S. to support the MEK, that is the Mojahideen-e-Khalq, in opposition to the Khomeini government of Iran. Now, MEK has been identified by the U.S. State Department as a terrorist organization, but we are funding it in Iran now, even as we speak, while MEK works against the government of the current government in Iran, trying to destabilize. And I think if you and I knew the extent of some of their activities, we would be kind of shocked. There are explosives being used. There is murder being perpetrated. And MEK is sort of like the Mujahideen in Afghanistan that we supported in the 70s and 80s against the Soviet Union. And the Mujahideen produced, bingo, Osama bin Laden. So here we are again. Here we are again. The United States should get its ass out of all of the murderous intrigues in the Middle East completely. If we want to protect Israel, which does not need our protection, with 150 to 200 nuclear-tipped warheads, Israel does not need the protection of the United States. I sometimes wonder if protecting Israel is not the lie that has been put out by so many U.S. governments, whether Democrat or Republican, that our real interest in the Middle East, unless you get religious fanatics like Bush, our real interest is the oil. If Israel had oil, we would probably be threatening them. Anyway, the MEK has been identified as a terrorist organization, and we now fund it. Going back to Gorbanifar, Michael Ledeen vouched for him to National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane. Do you remember him, McFarlane, who was ostensibly Oliver North's boss? This is so old. This is 25 years old, right? Who cares about this? Who cares about it? I care about it because 25 years later, when all of these miserable bastards should either be dead or retired, or if not that harsh, playing with their grandchildren someplace, all of them, from Oliver North to John Poindexter to Michael Ledeen to Gorbanifar to whatever Mossad agents were involved, CIA agents were involved, MEK agents were involved. Why don't you people go the goddamn hell home and let the rest of the world be? Why don't you just stop? What is your game? Well, whatever it is, they keep playing it, right? They keep playing it. Jesus, I just sounded like a 10-year-old there, didn't I, Kathy? I just get so frustrated by all this. I really do. All this intrigue and murder and mayhem over what? Oil? Power? All right. Go to Laura Rosen's website, warandpeace.com. And the piece is spelled P-I-E-C-E. She's got a great archive section. Check around. You will get all the information you could possibly want about so many of these issues. WarAndPeace.com, all right? But everybody went home that was holding on. I don't blame them. Let's try again for phone calls. 800-989-1480. Got to start with a girlfriend here, Paula. It's all right if I call you girlfriend, isn't it, Paula?
It's fine, Mike.
Calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the Internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. I'm okay.
Well, I originally called to, like, say, hey, we found Ronald Reagan's welfare queen, and it's John McCain. But after everything else you discussed tonight, it just seems inappropriate to even joke about it.
Let's joke. You know, you're right. He is a joke. McCain is this is the welfare queen. $58,000 this guy pulls down every year. I guess what gives him the 100% disability was the fact that his father was a 4-star admiral before McCain retired out of the Navy, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that had part of it. You know, it's nice to know, you know, it's good to be the king. People in high places. But just the fact, like my niece joined the Navy last year when she graduated from high school. And it really pisses me off that he's, balking about the new Bill of Rights because it's too generous.
I know.
And he's been living off the government teat for how long? I mean, has this guy ever not received a check from the government?
I know.
And the fact that, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, if the situation were reversed, if John Kerry had been receiving some kind of disability payment, you know they would have,
oh, sure,
you know, had campaign ads with him in the ghetto driving a Cadillac.
Sure, absolutely.
They would have, you know, and it just, and it didn't.
Plus, with who he was married to, a rich woman just like McCain.
Exactly. Like they have no shame.
No,
and
none,
then he,
none.
And then you know, remember this when the problems at Walter Reed,
yes,
came out. I think I read in the article that was in Newsweek. I think it was in Newsweek about how National Guard and reservists,
mm-hmm,
whose brains were just blown away,
mm-hmm,
were being, like, denied disability.
Yes.
Or, you know, just minuscule percentages of disability when there's no way that they could possibly support themselves or their families ever again for the rest of their lives.
Republicans hate the military. They especially hate veterans. What Republicans like are coffins coming home with flags on them because they know that soldier will not ask for nor demand anything. But Republicans hate soldiers, the military. There are some exceptions. I don't think Chuck Hagel hates the military. I don't think John Warner hates the military. But these politicians, Republican politicians, hate the military. It's disgusting. Hold on a second, Paula. Just hold on. Let me do
All
a
right,
break.
Right.
Let me do a break here. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Back to Paula, who called in from Bayonne. All right, where were we?
You were saying how the only soldiers, Republicans, like, are dead ones.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Back. And that's precisely what it is. And then with, you know, the drum beats for war with Iran, that has me really scared.
I know.
I'm really scared. I'm worried about my niece. I'm worried about everyone in there. And I'm thinking, you know what, they've destroyed two branches of the military already. The Army and Marines are pretty much shot. They still have the Navy and the Air Force to destroy. And and I can't help but believe, you know, when, you know, you were talking about the, you know, all the, everything, just the, you know, the similarities between now and what was going on in the run-up to the war with Iraq. And I can't help but imagine there's an evil purpose behind all of this. And it's not just incompetence. It's not just, what are they getting out of this?
I don't know. If that were an easily answered question, I think it would make it, certainly would make it easier for me to understand. But it is not. The only thing I can come back to is they are, is the idea that they are ignorant, savage killers who are power mad or money mad or a combination of both. But I, honest to God, have not a clue, Paula, as to what these people are about. Hey, listen, got to go. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, Paula. Sergeant Payne is calling from Daytona Beach.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Sergeant?
I'm doing great. Can we bash McCain?
You sure can. Go ahead.
I really want to. A couple of weeks ago, Governor Jesse Ventura was on the Larry King show. Did you happen to catch that?
I didn't.
King had asked him if McCain's age was an issue to him. And he came back with, well, considering the government makes you retire at 65 and you can't work for him past then, he goes, yeah, I think it's an issue to have a guy run a government that he can't go and get hired for.
Well, I don't know that 65 age is a retirement mandate is real, is it? I mean, there's a lot of people working in government who are over the age of 65. I'm assuming. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. How old was Rumsfeld before he retired?
I don't know. That was just brought up. And I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting.
The thing that bothers me about McCain is he doesn't seem to be playing with a full deck. He's got that herky-jerky kind of marionette movement that has freaked me out since I was like 5 years old and used to, my mother used to drag me to these hideous puppet shows that I hated. And McCain reminds me of that herky-jerky thing. Whether it has to do with his arms being pulled out of their sockets or just the fact that he is a marionette, I don't know. But that's one of several things that just totally creeps me out about this guy.
I personally think he's senile. I mean, for a
well,
guy,
that too. He's about where Reagan was when Reagan took office.
Yep. For him to walk around over there and say everything's okay when he's walking around the marketplace, and
right.
He's totally surrounded by every force there is.
Right.
You know, why doesn't he walk out in a neighborhood where the real people are?
Because he would be instantly killed or taken hostage and sold for 25,000 worthless U.S. dollars, and then his head would come back first, and then the rest of them.
I agree. And then just to touch on, you know, they're talking about the vice president. What about we make Barney Frank or Jesse Ventura? Let's really make everyone mad.
That would be a lot of fun. All right, Sergeant Payne, behave yourself. When's your next big professional wrestling gig?
Well, it was supposed to be next week, but I decided to take it off because my wife and I are celebrating my 40th birthday coming up.
Oh, yeah? Isn't that too old? Isn't that too old to be a professional wrestler?
Well, my wife thinks so.
Yeah. Well, but what is your chiropractor think?
Well, she keeps me in shape to keep going.
All right. Well, take it easy, Sergeant.
Thank you, and the best to you guys.
Thank you, sir. All right, Sergeant Payne. He is this program's not resident, but frequent celebrity. I think the we have one celebrity. Every program has one celebrity. Sergeant Payne is ours, right? I mean, you know, like television star celebrity. It'd be Sergeant Payne. We'll be back after the break. We have two open lines if you're interested. 800-989-1480 is the number. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century.
I believe oil prices are going up because the demand for oil outstrips the supply for oil. Oil's going up because we use too much oil. That's why the price of oil's going up.
Twenty-five before the hour, back to your phone calls very quickly. Ed is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic, 92.1. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Mike. You said during the last hour, you mentioned the use of boy, you know, child soldiers in Iran during the Iran-Iraq conflict. And you made it seem at the time as if there was some doubt as to whether, you know, as to the details of that and as to what happened. And
right.
I have a, you know, I have a source for, well, I have a book by P.W. Singer, who is a Middle Eastern expert with the Brookings Institution. And I just wanted to read a little bit from it, if you don't mind.
How long is it?
About three sentences.
Go ahead.
Thousands of children were pulled from their schools, indoctrinated into the glory of martyrdom, and sent to the front lines only lightly armed with one or two grenades or a gun with one magazine of ammunition. Wearing keys around their necks to signify their pending entrance into heaven, they were sent forward in the first waves of attacks to help clear paths through minefields with their bodies and overwhelm Iraqi defense.
Mm-hmm.
While the child-led human wave attacks were initially very successful, they soon bogged down as the Iraqis adjusted by developing prepared defenses and using chemical weapons.
Right.
And I just wanted to add really quick that we were the ones who sold them those chemical weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew what they needed them for when we sold them the chemical weapons. And anything else to say other than that?
Well, are you also aware, and this was shocking to me, not only did we provide weaponry to Saddam, we provided intelligence to Iran. It was a classic case of the United States in a mode somewhere out of the ninth ring of hell. I mean, this was demonic. This would be like Satan, if such a creature existed, coming up out of the bowels of hell and sitting on a mountain someplace and directing this slaughter between Iraq and Iran, on Monday giving help to the Iraqis, on Tuesday to the Iranians, on Wednesday to the Iraqis, on Thursday to the Iranians. This is what the United States of America did. in supporting and supplying and providing intelligence to both sides now go kill each other, knowing full well that children were being used for what you just read. This is one of the aspects of the government of the United States that just it turns my stomach to the same degree that the government of Nazi Germany in the 30s and 40s turned my stomach. We may not have sponsored death camps. We just did. We engineered the killing right out in the open, where millions of people, children, women, civilians, were slaughtered under the sun and not in a death camp. It's just, sometimes I wake up in the morning and I may think about this kind of stuff, and I'll tell you something, Ed, I just want to pull the covers over my head and go back to sleep.
I hear you, man. I really do.
But all right, thanks.
Thanks for letting me on. Bye.
Appreciate your call. Take care. I remember writing story after story after story. By that I mean minute and a half readers or 20-second package intros or 30-second reader for the anchor, writing story after story after story about the Iran-Iraq war when I worked at CNN the first time. And the videos that used to come in that never made air. We used to get, this was a long time ago. This is like in the mid-80s, early 80s. We used to get video feeds from the CNN Bureau in Beirut, Lebanon. CNN at the time did not have, I think we only had maybe at most, I'm guessing, 6, 8, 10 bureaus around the world. And God only knows how many they have now. But I can remember a specific Saturday when I was working and the supervising producer came to the writer's pod. There were like four of us there and said, okay, we've got some raw video coming in. We want you to come and sit and look at it so that when it is cut up by the video editors, you can decide what you're going to write. And they took us into this, it was like a satellite room where it was so antiquated. I mean, when I think about it now, it's like, Jesus God, did we have fire back then? Did we have wheels back then? But the video feed started coming in from Beirut. And it was stuff from the Iraq-Iran war that would never make air because it was so graphic. And four or five of us who were working that Saturday, writers and maybe a producer, sat there and watched this video feed as it came in. And what it was, the CNN camera guy had gone into a morgue in Baghdad, or maybe it was Tehran, I don't remember. Because it was so shocking. And the cameraman was there in this morgue. And what the video was about was children. There were stacks, and hear me, stacks of dead children. And the morticians, or whatever these people were, would drag a little corpse off the pile of the stacks of corpses. And hold these children up, some of them as young as 7, 8 years old, hold them up by an ankle over a table with a drain in it, and hose them down with a garden hose, washing off the caked blood and feces and vomit. And these children were part of the list of casualties between that war of attrition on that particular day. The story was about a children's morgue because it seemed like there were only children in here. That story never made air on CNN for obvious reasons. But we sat there and watched it. One of the people sitting in the room with me that day was another writer, Christiane Amanpour. You know what she went on to accomplish in her career. But we sat there. Another writer, a woman named Sparkle. That was her name. Who else was there? There must have been five or six of us sitting there. Four writers, a producer or two. Watching this video feed coming in of child after child, Iranian or Iraqi, it really doesn't matter. Gorgeous little kids dead, blown to pieces from this goddamn war. And eventually, one of the people in the room, I don't remember if it was man or woman, I don't remember who it was, one of the people had to excuse himself or herself to go vomit. Because the shock of what we were looking at was just so overwhelming. I will never forget that. Never. And it took a while for me to understand that the government of the United States, Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush, and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld were supplying the weaponry to both sides, intelligence to both sides. But I will never forget that. At the time, my little boy, Chris, who is now approaching 30, at the time he was about 6 or 7 years old. And I have a daughter now who's approaching 4. And you know, if you're a parent, you don't want to watch that kind of stuff. You don't. Because it turns you, I don't know how to explain it. It turns you against whatever entity is causing that. If it's your government or some other government or madmen or bombers or killers or suicide bombers or whatever it is, once you have literally seen that, and okay, it was a video feed. We couldn't hear the sounds. We couldn't smell the smells. But we saw that. I saw that. And I will never, ever, ever forget it. Seeing the bodies, these little ripped bodies of children being hosed down so they could be buried. Ten before the hour, thanks to the crew once again for tonight and for this week. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, Catherine Bay. Oh, and if I haven't mentioned it lately, you can become a Nova M founding member. I realize we've been on the air for over a year and a half now, but founding members have entree to some of the aspects of Nova M Radio that you might find interesting. Free downloads, free podcasts, free videos that are going to be posted pretty soon. And all that when you want them. There are all kinds of extra goodies coming your way soon. So go to NovaMRadio.com and check out how you become a founding member. We'd love to have you do that. Michael is calling from Los Angeles. Michael is listening on KTLK. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good, man. Thanks for being a witness and with your last story and helping us also witness the barbarity of war. Hideous, as always. So, the long-overdue Senate intelligence report came out yesterday. Incontrovertible evidence that, of course, Bush and company had willingly lied to the American public to lead us into this disaster.
Right.
Barack Obama and John McCain, both asked by the New York Times for comment, both refused. What do you think it's going to take for whatever's left of this thing called America to finally just walk out of its doors and straight to the White House and its corporate masters and go, okay, that's enough?
I wish I knew. I would love to see a candidate for president when asked, as you say, I'm not aware, but as you say, McCain and Obama were asked about for comment. I would love to see one of these people say, in real street language, that I can't use on the air, just exactly what that report indicates. The fact that the candidates don't do it, I think, is clear. This is what I was saying last night in the prelude to all that stuff I put out last night, is the fact that it doesn't make any difference if, and I got a lot of emails of people saying you're out of your mind, it doesn't make any difference if the Democrat or the Republican wins. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't make any difference if John McCain or Barack Obama don't win. Around the edges, yes, these two men have entirely different philosophies of government, but the fact is, the ownership of the United States has shifted. It's no longer owned by and for the people, that quaint phrase that was in the Constitution. It is now owned by massive corporations, including the military-industrial complex, but not limited to them.
No, certainly not.
So to watch someone like Barack Obama, who really inspires me, and then to know that he refused to make a
right.
comment about the about that report,
right.
It kind of leaves me feeling as crappy as I felt before I heard him make his speech.
No, and I completely sympathize, because I've certainly written enough missives and emails to various representatives and everything, tried things within this system to address it, and I get no returns. I get no comment either. You know, no matter what congressman or House of Representatives, it doesn't matter. They make no comment. I've written to the Obama campaign regarding this matter. I've got no comment. All you get back is I don't know what it is. It's some sort of standard document which includes, you know, you can also purchase Obama gear. I'm like, excuse me, I really don't think the baseball hat's going to, I really don't think that's the same. Let's see, they stripped the country of all of its dignity. They took all our treasury. They killed us. They murdered others.
You don't want a baseball hat.
Yeah, I really don't think that's the compensation. I know.
Yeah.
But they won't talk about impeachment.
I hear you.
Clearly to me the, if that isn't the yardstick that proves that they're all part of the same hypocrisy, then nothing is. So, as I say, my question remains, how far into the word that you can't say on the radio does the American public's face have to go before it goes, I've eaten enough?
Yeah. I wish I knew, but you
know, I wish I did.
The answer to that is up to us. It's not up to anybody but us. At some point, one would think, at some point, Americans would say, that's it, that's enough, and react. But if not now, when? So I'm left with the same question you are, Michael. Thanks for checking in, pal. I got to leave it there. I appreciate your call.
I'll say this. I think for the rest of his life, there ought to be someone hired and paid for by the American taxpayer to follow George Bush around and make sure he never, ever, ever plays golf again. That would be the least he could do.
Yeah. Frank is calling from Columbus, Georgia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Mike. I just want to thank you for giving the truth to us truth seekers out here. We're in desperate need of it. And it's just, I walk around and talk to my friends, and I feel like an alien on this planet, except when I listen to you.
Man, I know that feeling.
And I just thank you for that.
Well,
I was telling your screener that I love Kevin Kenney. I love his work, and I've talked with him in bars and seen him many times as solo or with Driving and Crying. And
uh-huh.
I was wondering, when you talk to him, when you say, hey, here's the Kevin Kenney where you are, and you play Straight to Hell,
uh-huh.
What's that about?
Just because he and I are great friends, have been for, 15, 18 years.
Okay.
I like his music. I liked his band, Driving and Crying. I like what he does, and I like his political point of view. Just, you know, we just met. We've met in bars. We've got drunk together. We've raised hell together, and I like his music, and that's pretty much what that is. Matter of fact, here he is. Frank, I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Even though he's from Minneapolis, he's from Milwaukee. He really knows how to play Southern music. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? And you have a great weekend, Kevin Kenney, wherever you are. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova Am Radio.